At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Lisa D. from Orange County.
I love her.
So do I.
My name's Lisa, I'm an addict. I'm grateful to be here, I'm grateful to be clean today. I'd like to thank this committee for asking me to speak. My clean date is September 15th, 1984. I've been clean for 41 years. That's a long time. I've been clean for more than half of my life. And so I've been doing this for a long time. You know I only have about 25 minutes, so I want to condense my story a little bit because I really want to talk about something that happened to me about 7 or 8 years ago that I didn't really talk about a whole lot because for some reasons I was embarrassed, for some reasons I was in a lot of pain, for some reasons I would say to myself, how did you not see this coming? How did you not know? And the final reason was because I hadn't resolved it within. And once I was able to come to a resolution, I was able to start opening up and talking about it. I moved to Las Vegas in 1996. I grew up in Orange County, got clean in Orange County. I was a very low bottom addict. And when I moved to Vegas, I didn't go to meetings. You know, when I got there, I didn't like the way they did them. They don't clap. And, you know, I looked for all the differences and I started hanging out with my ex-husband in clubs. He started selling drugs, we started selling drugs. Him and I split up, and when we split up, I continued to sell drugs. I used to tell the story that I started selling drugs. The drugs that I sold that got me arrested was because he told me to go do it. But that's not the truth. When him and I split up, I continued to sell drugs on my own, and I was clean. And thank God that I didn't pick up because I got really close a few times to picking up. But one time this guy that used to call my husband all the time called me, or he was calling the phone that we had, and one day I said, what are you looking for? And he says, I'm looking to buy some meth. And I said, I can get that for you. And I go, how much do you want? He says, I want a quarter pound. And so I met him at the McDonald's, sold him the meth. Nothing about it felt right, but I did it anyway. And a few weeks later, he kept calling, we want more, we need more, can you get us more? And for a while I kept saying, well, you know, I only did it that one time because I needed the money. And then I said, well, how much do you want? And he said, I want 20 pounds. And so a part of me was like, you know how much money I can make off 20 pounds? But I said, no, I can't do it. I would periodically pop into a meeting here and there. I knew that I was getting close to relapsing because the behavior had changed. And what I realized for myself is that relapse just doesn't happen where you're picking up. All the behavior starts to change too. And if I'm continuing to act in these behaviors and hanging out with these people, it's only a matter of time before I'm gonna pick up. And so I started to notice that there'd be people in front of my house. I started to notice that when I would leave my house that I was being followed. And one day I was driving to the movies and I had my kids in the car. I had my son at the time was 4. I have twins. My twin daughter was with me, she was 11. My second oldest daughter was with me, she was 15. And I was going to the movies at Boulder Station. And I'm driving down the street and I see a cop like behind me or to the side of me. And I'm thinking, no big deal. I'm clean. I haven't been arrested in years. And I pull into the parking lot and there's like 20 cops and they have me pinned in this parking lot with their guns drawn on me. And they're like, driver, get out of the car with your hands on your head. My 4-year-old son goes running out of the car. And he starts hitting one of the cops. He's like, why are you pulling a gun on my mom? You trying to kill my mom? The drugs I sold was to an undercover DEA agent. I'm gonna back up a little bit. About a few days prior, my oldest daughter was living with me and her and I had a huge argument. And in that argument, I grabbed her by the hair and it almost ripped my nail completely off the nail bed. And I remember leaving the house, pulling over into a parking lot and crying because my thought was, fuck it, I'm gonna get loaded. I have coke at home, I have meth at home, My son's diabetic. I have syringes. I'm just going to drive to Mesquite and I'm going to get high. And I sat in that parking lot and I said, dear God, please help me get back to the program because I don't know how. So I got arrested. I spent the weekend in a holding cell. On Monday, I went to court and I was released. And while I was in that holding cell, I remember that prayer that I prayed. And I went, oh, I go, okay, God, that was kind of funny, I guess. You know, when I prayed that prayer, we didn't have to be so dramatic. The truth of the matter is that I don't change behaviors until they cause me pain. Sometimes I need to be completely stopped because I would have ended up using. I was back in meetings, stopped selling drugs, stopped dealing with all the drug people, and I started to go to court. And after about 3-4 months, I had a federal public defender. He called me in his office and he said, Lisa, they made you an offer. And I said, what is it? He said, 37 months. And I go, 37 months? I've been clean a long time. I'm not going to prison. I have 4 little kids. I have an elderly mother. And I hired, and this was in 1999, I hired a federal attorney that cost me at that time $15,000. Had to borrow money from everybody I knew to hire this attorney. And he called me in about 3-4 months later and he said, Lisa, they made you an offer. And I said, what is it? He said, 37 months. And I said, well, I could have got 37 months $15,000 ago. He goes, yeah, but I got you the boot camp program. And I said, well, I'm not going to prison. I want to go to trial. And he said, Lisa, we'll go to trial if you want, but let me tell you how the feds work. They have mandatory minimums and they have sentencing guidelines. And if you go to trial and you lose, they're going to give you the max on your sentence. And I said, well, what is that? And he said, 10 years. So for a quick second, I went 3 years, 10 years, I'll take the 3. I was 18 years clean when I self-surrendered to a women's federal prison camp in Victorville, California. I did a year there. And then I got transferred over to Bryan, Texas, where I did a boot camp program. I was able to release back to a federal halfway house and be closer to my family. I was 20 years clean going to a meeting with an ankle bracelet on. While I was in the halfway house, I was told that I needed to find a job. And so I go, well, who's gonna hire me? You know, any casino that hires me, they're gonna do a background check. They're not gonna hire me. And somebody in the halfway house said, well, you should try like a cab company or a towing company. So I opened up the yellow pages and the first towing company that I saw, I called. And the owner of the company answered the phone. And I started questioning, you know, are you hiring, blah, blah, blah. And he says, well, why don't you come in for an interview? So I went in for an interview and he hired me. And about a year into me working there, him and I started to have an affair. He was married. He was married to his high school sweetheart. He had 2 small children. I was also married at the time. And we started in this affair. He left his wife. I left my husband. He left his wife. I left my husband. And we moved in together. Now, the relationship wasn't all bad, but in the beginning, because he had a lot of money, my motives were to live that lifestyle. And I could remember my sponsor told me at the time, because I would call her, oh my God, I got this new Louis Vuitton bag, and I got this, and I got that. And she said, Lisa, you can no longer talk to me about this relationship. And I said, why? And she said, because I'm not going to condone the behavior, but also, how do you expect God to bless a relationship that started out like this? And I went, oh, she don't know what she's talking about. I'll just get a new sponsor. And so I got a new sponsor, and yes, I was able to talk about it. But what happened in my life was I lived a completely different lifestyle. Now, I'm not justifying my behavior. I had been a single mom for quite a long time, and I was living paycheck to paycheck. To go from that to the way I was living, being picked up in limos, staying in 5-star hotels, eating in 5-star restaurants, flying first class, gold, diamonds, jewelry, handbags. It's like, I was obsessed with more, more, more. I can remember my wants got bigger and bigger. And then there came the time that about 7 years ago, he cheated. And I used to hear stories of his ex-wife that when they split up, that she would be in her closet crying. And a part of me went, oh yeah, well, that's not true, because that's not what he's saying. The truth of the matter is, I was in denial. I was in denial because I liked the way I was living and I didn't want to have to give it up. And then when he cheated, I found myself in my bedroom floor crying. I used to go to meetings. We were together for 16 years, and I remember a friend of mine in Vegas, I was still living in Vegas, I would go to meetings and he would say, Lisa, why aren't you sharing about this? And I said, because I'm embarrassed. I had completely lost my whole identity in this relationship. I started asking people, like, how do I do this? How do I do that? I had to go back to work after not working for 15 years. And a friend of mine and her husband, who owned a construction company, hired me. My anxiety levels were so high that I would be at lunch with friends or a sponsor or sponsees, and I'd say, I can't sit here, I gotta go. I would be sitting at my desk and my thoughts were loud. I would run to the bathroom and I would hug myself. And I would say, Lisa, just stay clean. Just stay clean. I got you. I love you. And what I started to learn in that is that, because sometimes, you know, I can get focused on over there. I can get focused on where I want to be and miss all the beauty in those steps. And as hard as it was sometimes to sit in meetings, I remember when I was new and I was told, you know what, be patient, pray, and wait. And I was like, well, how in the fuck do I do that? I mean, I've been jamming needles in my arm for a long time. How do I do that? And it was like everything that was happening to me was all part of that third step. You know, turning my will and my life over to the care of God and actually leaving it there, because I manipulated, I conned, I made things happen according to the way I wanted them to happen, even with a lot of clean time. I mean, we all hear that clean time doesn't equal recovery. Well, recovery doesn't equal clean time. You can't get recovery without clean time. And so the things that I always held on to, because what this program has done for me is when I sit in meetings and I hear somebody say something that I've gone through and it resonates with me, it goes, oh, Lisa, you can let yourself off the hook. See, just because I had whatever it was at the time, 30 some years clean, didn't mean that all those behaviors had changed. I was a very sick girl when I got here. You know, favorite color, what is that? Like, I didn't know what my favorite color was. I didn't even care what my favorite color was. I used to live and lived to use, and it started from the time I got up to the time I went to bed. But the work came in doing steps. The work came in going to getting outside help. And slowly but surely, I started to change. And recovery, so how I look at it is like recovery doesn't just pour over into my life, it spills over into areas of my life. But first of all, I have to run it in the ground. See, because I didn't care whether she was in her closet crying, because I was coming up. I deserved this. It was my time. I got everything. My kids were taken care of. My bills were paid. I didn't have to worry financially. And although I don't really remember thinking like that, that's what was happening. And so when I found myself in my bedroom crying, and I thought, the only thing that's going to give me some sanity here is prayer. And I started to meditate. And I would be meditating 2 and 3 times a day, because for that moment I could quiet my mind. And a few years after that, and that was a really hard thing for me to go through. And I would just tell myself, just stay clean, Lisa, just stay clean. I knew the faith that I had is that I knew that I was gonna be okay. I just didn't know when. So when I would wake up the next morning, that night, I would cry myself to sleep. And the next morning when I would wake up, I'd say, well, maybe today's that day. And then it wasn't. And then that night I'd cry myself to sleep and I'd wake up the next morning and I'd say, well, maybe today is that day. And then it wasn't. And eventually I started to move forward, because recovery also looks like, for me, like 3 steps forward, 2 back, 3 steps forward, 2 back. I kept moving forward. I'd stay focused on where I was at, and I hung out with people and I went to a lot of meetings and I didn't fucking use. A couple years later, I met my now husband, and I was still healing from that relationship, but I was at the end still dealing with some residual. When I was new, I remember me telling my sponsor when I was early recovery, I want a relationship, I want a relationship. And she'd say, Lisa, I want you to go home and make a list of the type of man that you want to be with. And so I went home, made that list, and he looked really good on paper. And I went back and I read the list to her, and she goes, wow, that's great, now become him. And I went, well, how do I do that? The truth of the matter is, I wouldn't have attracted what I had on paper, because I was continually attracting men and people in my life that validated how I felt about me. I was in toxic relationships. Recovery didn't show up there for a while either. But when I met my now, I had made another list when I was going through that. And when I met my now husband, the lesson that I learned from all of that is that I will not hurt another woman again. And I will not hurt myself. That I am not going to settle for crumbs, because I've settled for crumbs a long time. Just give me a crumb, give me a little pat on the head, and I'll stay. And in that transition period, I learned to accept the whole cookie. And so I made this other list and folded it and put it in a file. And I met my now husband I knew him before, but we started dating in 2021. And then I moved from Vegas out to Palm Desert, and I was unpacking. And I came across that list, because I had made the decision, I will not date anybody that is married. I will not date anybody that is married and separated. I will not date anybody that is in a relationship. And so when I met him, he wasn't. He had no recent exes, he had no ex-wife, he didn't have a wife. And when I was there and I pulled out this list one day and I started to read it, and I realized not only had I become that woman, but I had attracted that man. And I am very grateful. This relationship is a lot different because it started out different. You know, recovery for me has been a process. You know, I had a vision of the type of woman I wanted to be, and I'm not talking about all the material stuff. I wanted to know how to walk with my head held high. I wanted to know how to live in integrity and make integrity-based choices. And as recovery started to pour off into these, spill over in these different areas of my life, I was able to heal each one of those areas. See, because I believe that if I just don't pick up, recovery will eventually show up there. So I just wanted to say, I want to thank this convention. I love you, honey. Thank you for being my rock. Thank you for being my anchor. Him and I prayed driving over here. And I just want to say thank you to this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. That's beautiful. All right. Now I would like to introduce our next speaker, Igor F. from SFE. Igor!
Hello, everybody. My name is Igor. I'm an addict. I got a lot of fans here. Anyway, thanks the committee for asking me to share. It's always a privilege. I'm in love with Narcotics Anonymous, and I got a lot of stories about recovery. So the topic they gave me was, Guide Me in My Recovery. So at the end of every meeting, we say, take my will in my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. Right? I heard that. And, it refers to God or a higher power. And I approached my sponsor and said, we got a problem. I am atheist. There's no God. I can prove it to you. He says, Igor, don't worry about it. Just keep coming back and keep your eyes and ears open, and you will find God. Right? So, obviously, God works through people. And my first introduction was one of our brothers who passed away. His name is Billy Michaels. He came to rehab that I was at, and he shared, right? And some of you know me, but most of you don't. So, I really love narcotics, right? I wrote poems about it. Not in a million years I would think that I would end up in Narcotics Anonymous, right? I was just a bad criminal, so my career got short. Anyway, so I'm listening to this guy, Billy M. He's at the podium, and he's talking about his affinity to narcotics. And when he talked, I tasted dope in my mouth, and I knew that he felt exactly the same way that I did. And what does it mean? That's a therapeutic value of one addict helping another. I knew that I wasn't alone. And you know, this guy was nothing like me. He probably spent more time in prison than I was alive. But he talked about recovery, a house, a wife, and a dog, and all that shit that I had no idea about it. But I knew that he was just like me, and he was staying clean. So maybe this could work for me. And so this was like this was my higher power showing me the way, right? And then, so the second story is even better. So I was about ready to leave that rehab, and they made you get a job, and I was not a job ready person, right? I ran the streets, you know. And so I'm working at this factory in Monrovia, and I'm putting some stuff together. It's not working out for me because I got two left hands. I'm an idea man, you know what I mean? A lot of great ideas. I actually wanted to thank Lisa for sharing. It's awesome because just yesterday I had another great idea, right? I built a spray booth in my body shop, right? And I entered all these heat lamps. And it bakes the paint, it looks really beautiful. I was so happy at the result. And then my head says, you know, at night you can grow some weed. It would be a supplemental income. You know, but I know to share this stuff with others, so it takes the power out of it. So anyway, I'm at this job in Monrovia, and I had a terrible day. Nothing worked my way, nothing. So I go outside to get a bus to go back to my rehab, and I see this bus leave. And I'm like, fuck this, excuse my language. I'm tired of being a good boy. Let me get into some mischief, right? So I see this old beat up car with a hippie looking guy with a lot of tattoos passing by. I flag him down. I'm hoping he would have some chiva, right? And he's an addict, but he's a member of Narcotics Anonymous. With 8 years clean, you know. I consider him like he's my Eskimo. Because he gave me a ride and he knew my counselors and then we started talking and he's like, so what do you think, brother? I said, well, you know, it's okay. I just have a little problem with God. And he told me, you know, well, don't worry about it. Just keep coming back. And, you know, if you're an atheist, agnostic, whoever you are, you know, don't worry about it. It took me 20 years to find my higher power. But just keep coming back. That's what we hear in these meetings, you know. And so, guide me in my recovery, right? How's the God guides me in my recovery? Which, okay, I got clean, right? They told me, go to a lot of meetings, get involved. How do I get involved? So, at this time, I was in San Gabriel Valley. It separated from Los Angeles area. And they told me, okay, go to an H&I panel, do some panels, right? So I go to an H&I panel, we have a fight, but they gave me a panel at a nut house. And I bring a couple of my friends, and we share. And when I share, you know, I didn't know what I was gonna say. I mean, I'm like, I have 10 months clean, right? When I share, I had goosebumps going through me because I felt like, hey, maybe, you know, I could share that once an addict is not always an addict and we do stay clean. And maybe this is what I'm supposed to do, right? And so my higher power explained it to me several months later how this shit works, right? I had a fight with my future ex-wife, right? And I couldn't fall asleep, right? I was plotting against her. A lot of bad stuff. But the thing is, I couldn't fall asleep. And like, I got tired of my brain, and it's like 11:30 at night, and I get a phone call, right? And this guy says, is this Igor? I go, yes. He goes, my name is so-and-so, and I just wanted to call you because a couple of months ago you came to the hospital. And I was there because I was trying to commit suicide, and they kept me. And I heard you share, and I just wanted you to know that I'm clean. I've got 90 days clean. I got a sponsor I'm going to meet. And this guy just would not fucking shut up. And, you know, I started smiling because it was so fucking awesome, you know? It was so awesome, and I forgot about all the plans against Sylvie. I forgot all the plans, and this is a message from my higher power. This is what you're supposed to do, you know? And I just recently was watching the show, right? They were saving kids from, they were finding kids that were kidnapped and reuniting them with families and watching the, you know, how beautiful it is and watching what happens in their eyes. And I realized, you know, this is what we do in Narcotics Anonymous. We save lives. We bring families together. This is what we do. So, I mean, and so my NA panel, it's from nut houses, it evolved. Now I go to jails. And it's fucking awesome, you know, you watch these guys and, you know, you give them a little bit of hope that, you know, addict like me, I'm not supposed to be here, and yet I am, and I'm like a cheer boy for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I think it's awesome, right? Cheer boy, cheerleader. Anyway, so the other problem I had was, you know, when I read the basic text, right, it says, honesty. I said, oh man, that's a fucking problem. Because I lied all the time, even when I didn't have to lie. And so, you know, how did my higher power guide me in my recovery, right? So I met her at my home group called Early Bird. I still go to that meeting 35 years later, right? She wanted me to help her cheat the government. And I just knew what to do right away. Anyway, so one day she calls me and she says, I'm kicking him. Because, you know, every time she would call me, I was on pink cloud, right? I say, man, this is so good. I wake up, I don't have to be sick. I don't have to think about how I'm going to beat somebody or get some money. It's just beautiful. The sun is shining. And I wish you'd come and join me, right? So one day she calls me and says, I'm kicking with my sisters in San Fernando Valley. I said, oh, I'm gonna take you to a meeting. But see here, I'm already Mr. NA, so I know not to do a 12-step call by myself. So I take my friend Portia and we took her to a meeting. 3 weeks later, she moved in with us, with me, right? And Sylvie was a lot smarter. She was a Dauphine girl, but she was a lot smarter than me, right? And at that time, I thought I was a gangster, so I told her a lot of gangster stories. And she would look at me and say, so when she called me, I called my sponsor. I said, Jeff, this girl was sent to me by God. She says, but look, you don't believe in God. You're atheist. I said, I do now. Right? So Sylvie helped me out with my honesty problem, right? Because I tell her a lot of stories, and she'd look at me and say, mm-mm, Igor, it's not what you told me 3 months ago. I said, Sylvie, why do I have to remember what I told you 3 months ago? She goes, stupid, if you just stop lying, you wouldn't have to remember. And that's my higher power guiding me in my recovery and showing me, why do I need to be honest? My life and my recovery depends on it. That's why I need to be honest. If you're not an addict, you want to lie, cheat, manipulate, it's okay. My problem is I'll end up using and dying. So I need this program, I need the spiritual principles. But you know, yes, with Sylvie, these examples are all good, but you know, I still doubt the higher power because of my intellectual nature, right? I don't want to believe it. So me and Sylvie get married. We get a house with a white picket fence, and we go, because of my criminal record, we can't go outside the United States, but we go to Puerto Rico for the convention. For our honeymoon, right? And we get, this is a beautiful place, we get into this hotel, and it's very nice, it's right on the beach, and I say to Sylvie, you know, this would be a cool place for an NA convention, right? And the elevator door opens, and here stands the guy with the NA t-shirt. And he's got a wife who is not one of us, but we start hugging him and talking to him, and he starts telling us how the World Service of NA from Northridge send him literature and send him packages. And, you know, we just knew that this marriage was blessed by a higher power of NA. Didn't last very long. I came home one day and I look at Sylvie and I says, baby, if I didn't know any better, I would have thought you got loaded. She goes, oh no, I'm just tired. All right. Denial is a motherfucker, especially when you love somebody, right? But, you know, obviously it came out, and I'm Mr. NA, all right? I'm like, okay, I love you, but you can't stay at the house because you're using. I'm sending you to Impact. She goes, you're not sending me anywhere. I'm leaving. I don't love you anymore. I'm leaving. And, you know, she broke my heart. She broke my heart. But, you know, so all these people are calling me and telling me, hide your money and this. And I'm like, fuck you. Get out of my face. Right? But Sylvie's sponsor's husband called me. And I said, what do you want, him? I think it's sort of like a conflict of interest. He goes, no, man, I just want to make sure you're all right. Can I take you to a meeting? You want to hang out? And this is the fucking love and the spiritual part of Narcotics Anonymous. This is it. This is it. This man didn't want anything from me. He just wanted to make sure that I was okay. That I was okay. Right? So the other thing is reservations, right? We all have reservations, right? I never had a lot of money when I was using, you know, I spent it on drugs. So I always thought that if I had enough money, I could stay loaded, right? And I wouldn't have to listen to all the bullshit, you know, because I was a rebel without a cause, right? So we're at this World Convention of NA in Chicago, and I'm standing at the Sears building to go upstairs. And I see this guy with the badge with the funny Australian accent, and we start rapping and la la la. And he's a doctor from Australia. And you know what kind of doctor he is? He's an anesthesiologist. You know, if you don't know what it is, it's the man with the bag. Right? With the big bag. And he's sitting right next to me celebrating recovery. That's, you know, that's a message. That's a message from God. You know, that's the message from God that I don't have any reservations. You know, my place is here, and my job is real simple. It becomes simple over the years. You know, don't think so much about yourself and help somebody else. And when I do that, my life is beautiful. My life is completely beautiful. I mean, it's not without challenges. You know, we always trip about something, but when I do that, there is no problems. And you know, it's funny, this guy, where is he? Jay, sitting right there. He just sent me, this is how my higher power guides me in my recovery. He just sent me a pamphlet called In Times of Illness. Why? Because I was talking shit. I got tired of picking up people from treatment centers because lately, they've been giving them a lot of drugs in treatment centers. And I don't want to waste my time. You know, I don't want to waste my time. And, you know, maybe I'm like an old record, but, you know, if you're taking drugs, I got nothing for you. You know, that's basically, you know, my attitude. But he's sending me this big brochure that was obviously written in 1992. I never knew that. And it talks about mental illness and recovery. And you know, it just kind of like, it sort of like opened up my eyes because this is not the same era as when I got clean. You know, this is not the same era. There's a lot of people with mental illness and they're among us. And, you know, we gotta keep our seats warm for them just as well as anybody else. And, you know, it's important that we all see that. It's important that we all see that. I you know, because I have this, you know, I don't take nothing, blah, blah, blah. But I had a sponsee that he was bipolar. And, 5 minutes, I'm already done. Man, I have a lot more to say. Anyway. He was bipolar, and he was like the best sponsee I've ever had. He called me 6 years straight, every single day, and he had questions. He had legitimate questions, and he was recovering. And one day, you know, I knew that he was taking psych meds because he was bipolar, and he was recovering really good. And one day, he decided that he didn't need this medicine anymore. And then he committed suicide, you know. And it was heartbreaking. And his parents called me, and, you know, but that's just reality. So, you know, no matter how cranky and, you know, I am, The thing is, we need to open our eyes and warm our seats for every Eric Wood, no matter, you know, what he is. So the last story I'll tell you, oh, hi, Manny. The last story I'll tell you is in time of illness, how I ended up in the hospital, right? I was working and I tripped out on the tow hook. I landed and I cracked my hip. And so they're driving me to the emergency room on the gurney, and you know, I'm Mr. NA, I'm yelling, please don't give me any drugs, I'm a recovering addict, right? And they gave me a surgery, and when I woke up, I started yelling for morphine because I was in a lot of pain. So they gave me a shot, I fell asleep. I woke up the next morning, and the nurse comes in with the syringe. And I said, what is it? She goes, morphine. I go, no, thank you. Because I knew I was going to be in the hospital for a week. If they gave me a shot of morphine 3 times a day for 7 days, I'm done. Right? So I said, no. They said, oh, doctor's orders. I go, I don't care. So they had to have a meeting, right? So she comes back and says, okay, we're just going to give you 2 extra strengths Vicodins. I didn't know what it was, right? I said, okay. So they gave it to me, and 10 minutes later, I'm floating, scratching my balls, and talking shit to nurses. And I said, no, I can't go out like that. I can't go out like that. And so this is just my story, but with the help of all of you guys in Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't have to take anything anymore. And I spent 7 days in the hospital. But, so there was, my hospital room was full of people for 7 days straight. And you know, it's a Burbank hospital, they're asking, who is this guy? Is he an actor? No, he's an addict in Narcotics Anonymous. And that's the kind of love and support I get in these rooms. Thank you very much for your time.